Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Hi everyone, Nina here. And today I am celebrating the fact that we have had 6 months of this podcast. I can't believe the time has gone so quickly. And October 31st was the first day of episodes that I released, and I released three. One with Natalie Newman, also known as the Intolerant Gourmand. Episode two was with Michelle Berrydale Johnson from Free From Foods Matter. And episode three was with the Allergy and Free From show's own Tom Treverton, who was talking to me all about what the Allergy and Free From shows are all about. So because it's 6 months into the podcast, I thought I'd do a little rundown of the top 10 most downloaded episodes so far. And it's been really exciting seeing the number of you get in touch over the last few months. And believe me, I did not know what to expect when I started this podcast. All I had in mind was there doesn't seem to be anything out there for people with allergies which shares experiences that you can just listen to, that you can have all in one place, and you can always plug into wherever you are, whether you're on the go, in the car, traveling on public transport. You don't need internet just to download them. And I was like, there needs to be something like this, because when you're really feeling down, sometimes all you need is a hug and someone to tell you it's going to be okay. And I know when you've got allergies, from my own experience, that sometimes you really need that, because there are some times that can be absolutely amazing, especially when you finally make a cake that actually doesn't sink or fall apart. But there can be some times that are really difficult and can be downright horrid. When that happens, we need friends and we need a community. So that's what I wanted to do when I started this podcast. And so far, you guys have been absolutely amazing. So here, and I'll be running down the top 10 most downloaded episodes so far. And I've been cutting little snippets from each of them. The bits that I've really liked and I've found inspiring, or things that I thought were just really great tips and tricks from some of our guests. And I've had a mixture of guests. I've had bloggers, I've had business owners, I've had some of you come on the podcast as well. And also I've interviewed my own parents, and I've done a little bit of talking on a couple episodes myself. So it's really exciting. I didn't know what I was going to expect. And the download chart, I just got off my podcast statistics, and it tells me how many people download each episode. So without further ado, let's get going with our top 10 countdown. So at number 10, we have Cindy Murray, who came and talked to me on episode 24. Now, Cindy has severe intolerances, and so much so, she thought, and her doctors thought, that she might actually have celiac disease. But it turns out that after taking the celiac disease test, she was 0.1 below the threshold for celiac disease. And some of her symptoms were completely debilitating. I mean, they stopped her from functioning throughout the day. She just had to be in bed or near a bathroom for most of the day. So in this little clip, I asked her to tell me about her journey, and in the clip I'm going to share with you now, she shares her top tips for her advice for you. If you're suffering, if no one's listening to you, but you know there's something wrong, here are her top tips of how she managed to get to a diagnosis and figure out what's wrong with her. So here we go with Cindy. What are your three top tips for someone who is suffering with intolerances or something and they're not sure where to turn next?
Well, when when I found my lovely GP, the first thought that I had was, if only everyone had a GP that listened. If your GP doesn't listen, make them. Do what I did. Write a food diary, write a symptom diary, show them that you've been keeping track of what's been going on and you need some sort of testing, whatever it is, for whatever allergy or intolerance, demand that you get tested. Secondly, I went online and contacted Celiac UK for my own benefit. But there are plenty of organisations out there that I know of that, you know, they can give advice when it comes to allergies and intolerances and this, that and the other. See who you can talk to. Find people on Facebook even, you know, bloggers and such like yourself. Because obviously people have been doing this for quite a while. And those that have, they've got a lot more information than anybody that, you know, you probably know locally.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do. And thirdly, know your own body. You know, if you know there's something wrong, or if you feel like there's something wrong, then look into it, basically. There's not much else I can really say other than that, because that's how I did it.
So that was Cindy Murray in episode 24. And if you want to listen to her episode, just go straight to episode 24 if you're downloaded on iTunes, or go to the website, just type in 24 into the search bar, or you can go to the show notes of this episode and there'll be a link there. You can also type in eatallergysafe.com/episode and then the number 24. So in number 9 in our countdown, I was actually quite surprised, because the episode which came in at number 9 is episode 11. And now episode 11 was one I just did, actually, talking about taming your allergy fears. And I gave you 5 things I did to tame my allergy fears. Now, the little excerpt I'm going to play for you now is one I felt was really important, because when you have an allergic reaction, which for many of us is quite a scary concept, if you haven't had one or you worry about having one, when you have had one, afterwards, you just kind of freak out. And it doesn't matter what age you are, you get scared of food. And that's not so good, especially if you're a parent with a young child. What do you do when your kid is too scared to eat? I mean, they're only going to eat certain things, and sometimes they're not always the healthiest, or they need to have a more varied diet just to be healthier. So in this one, I talk about how I manage my food aversion. And when I had my allergic reaction, I was 16. So I was, you know, I was a bit older, which meant that my mum wasn't controlling everything I ate. She couldn't do a huge amount. So I did it myself, and I kept it quite private as well when I was afraid of food. So in this little clip, I talk about how I managed and how I got myself over my fear of food after my allergic reaction. Am I going to have another allergic reaction? Am I going to end up in hospital? Am I then going to be really sick afterwards? You know, because having an allergic reaction is not very pleasant anyway. But this fear, and I didn't really eat that much. I was scared to eat. Also, I actually couldn't eat that much because after the allergic reaction, proteins just made me feel sick. So I actually was kind of vegetarian for about a month because I just couldn't. The protein was too much for me. It just made me feel very sick. But one of the things is you get hungry. So here again, there's another biological thing. You get hungry, you need to be sustained with food to be able to function. But again, I was really scared. Everything, I would not touch anything with a warning on it, which sometimes I would sometimes decide it would be okay, depending on the type of warning. But then, no warnings, I wouldn't really eat anything. I would check everything. I wouldn't want anyone to cook for me. I'd question my parents if they were cooking dinner, and But I realised I couldn't live in fear. I had to do something about this food aversion. I mean, they call it food aversion because you get so sick from eating foods that you're averse to it. But it really comes down to the fact you're scared that you're going to get sick and that you might die. And again, for anyone, that's quite a lot to deal with. So how did I manage that? Well, part of it for me was taking ownership over the cooking. And that really helped me. The more control I had, the more confident I felt. And this has led me on to a number of other things, because I wasn't always very confident speaking about my allergies. I wasn't always, you know, telling people what I needed. I mean, I did, but there were times where I'd be like, oh, I don't want to be a botherer, so I'm not going to say anything, or I feel bad that people are having to make special allowances for me. And, you know, as a teenager, you kind of, you're conscious of these sorts of things. But after my reaction, in some good ways, the fear kind of was like, nope, you are not going to feel bad about other people because you want to stay alive. And this whole experience, actually, it made me realise about some of the things that I did and also some of the things that are useful to overcome living in fear of allergies. Because living in fear of allergies is not healthy and it's no way to live. Living in fear of anything is no way to live, because life is there to be enjoyed. It's to be, you know, there's so much out there, and there's so much out there for your children and for you as a family and for your children to explore as they get older, that you don't want to stop any of that. And allergies, the thing about allergies is that, yes, they're an invisible disease, but you know the cause of them and they are so easy to avoid. And I'm saying easy in that you know what the allergens are. So there are easy solutions to make it possible to live and live well with a good quality of life. So that was me talking all about how I got over my food aversion. And I hope you found it useful for any of you who have kids, or if you've had an allergic reaction yourself. Just remember, go back to basics, cook food that is completely natural, that, like, so fresh fruit and vegetables, raw meat. Just go back to complete basics, have it bland if that makes you feel better. Just get in the kitchen and take control of your food, and that will help. So in at number 8 in our countdown is one of my mum's episodes. And actually, my mum asks me every so often, so how are our episodes doing? So she's going to be really happy that they're in the top 10 most downloaded. And that's not the only one of hers that's in this list, actually. So, and it's my mum's birthday this weekend, so that'll be quite a nice birthday surprise for her. When I interviewed my mum, I did actually a 4-part series with my mum for 2 of them, and then my mum and my dad for the second 2, talking all about how she managed before the internet. Because when I was diagnosed, we didn't have the internet, there weren't mobile phones, and there wasn't the information that is now so readily available. Also much harder to find out who, if there were any other people that had allergies like me, and we didn't know any. So in episode number 13, where I interviewed my mum, in this little section, my mum is going to talk about how she helped me practice looking after my allergy and the importance of helping me practice. And my mom also talks about how it was a joyous event going out to dinner and going out to restaurants. I bet you didn't expect that one. So let's get over to me and my mom having a chat. What was it like? I mean, were you worried about sending me off to secondary school?
No, because again, you had all the forms that had to be filled in. You had a chat with the nurse at the school. And it was all very processed, just like it was at your junior infant school.
Yeah, yeah. I always met the nurse on the first day. I remember that.
Yeah.
And I'd always go introduce myself to the, if there was a new nurse.
Yeah.
And say hello.
And that was something you'd organised with the nurse, I think, or the nurse said to you.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of both, because I think you always checked up that I knew who she was and she knew who I was. You did ask me, have I gone and met the nurse? And when there was a new nurse, have you gone and seen her? How does she know who you are? Have you told her about... Yeah, I think...
Yes, I would have done that. Yeah. I don't remember, but I know I would have done that.
Yeah, I definitely think you did. You always made sure I was doing the things I should be doing.
Yeah, and it would have been easy for me to do it, but actually you doing it is all part of the process of you taking ownership on it.
Yeah, definitely. What about going out to dinner? Or how did we manage that when I was a child and then as I grew older?
Oh, that was actually a joyous thing for you to do. Yes, it was a joy for us to take you out to a restaurant, because we automatically discount Thai Chinese, because I've seen some of the lorries pull up outside those restaurants and there's great big barrels of peanut oil. So I'm thinking, oh, I don't think we're going to go into those restaurants. But we would actually go to the restaurants ourselves, first of all, and talk to the people who manage it, if not ran it.
Okay, so talk to other restaurants other than Asian, so Chinese.
Yeah,
Indian.
So Dad and I, we would go and say, how do you deal with this? And they would tell us. And we would say, well, we'd love to bring our daughter over for a meal. Would you be able to help us with a meal that she can eat? And they said, yes, sure. So we did that. And I would say to you, would you like to order the food and let them know that you're a nut allergy sufferer? Sometimes you didn't want to, and sometimes you did. But that's another part of the process of your ownership.
So I hope you enjoyed that little chat with me and my mum. And of course, if you want to listen to that whole episode, just go to episode 13 in your list or download from iTunes, and the link will be in the show notes. So in our countdown at number 7, I have the lovely Karen Woodford, who runs Safer Eating. And I interviewed her on episode 17. Now, Karen is celiac, and both her daughters, or at least one of them, has definitely been diagnosed as celiac. And she suspects her youngest daughter is also celiac, but is too young to have a test to confirm that. So their family, apart from her husband, are on a strictly gluten-free diet. And in this excerpt, I wanted to show you a little bit where she's talking about how she's been teaching her daughters to look after their celiac disease, to be safe, and also how she's learned for her own daughter, because she and her eldest daughter were diagnosed within a year of each other. It was quite close together. I can't remember the exact number of months, but it was very close together. So they were learning together. So here she is talking about all about how she's learnt and how she's been teaching her daughters too. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you are raising your girls and how you're kind of teaching your girls about celiac disease and how to manage it. And obviously your husband hasn't had a celiac disease. So how have you been teaching him too?
So it helped that I set this business up, because obviously I learned a lot about it straight away. I'd been, my best friend's got it, so I did know probably more than a lot of people about celiac disease. But I didn't, things that catch everybody out, they caught me out too, like stock cubes and Worcester sauce and those kind of things, oyster sauce, things that you just wouldn't expect, potentially being used. And I think she caught me with a stock cube one day, and I was like, oh no. Didn't realize. So I think I knew quite a lot anyway, but it was really useful with Megan, my 4-year-old, because she got diagnosed at 2, but it was really close to when I got diagnosed. We kind of did a lot of learning together, and I was always checking labels and kind of talking to her about it. And even though she was only 2, she couldn't speak very well, she just seemed to know automatically, because she was so ill. She just cut out gluten and just I can remember somebody really, I think it was only about 2 weeks after she'd been gluten-free, because I think I felt it more than she did. I was really, really upset about it, but she just took it in a stride and kind of just gone with it. And somebody offered us some some garlic bread in Italian. And I was like, oh, and she just went, no, it makes my tummy sore. I was like, oh, bless her. So she's just kind of known from the beginning and constantly asked me to check labels, constantly checks things. Mm-hmm. Well, she knows how to read gluten-free already. She just read it the other day. I tried to teach her one of, gluten and free as one of the first few words that she can read, because that's obviously going to be useful to her. Mm-hmm. She's really good at checking stuff. I can remember she asked nursery to give me a ring about some biscuits that they had. So they had to pretend to ring me because I knew, like I actually said on the packet, that they were gluten free, so I knew they were safe. So she's really good. But I just wrote a blog about it the other day, actually. With my youngest, we probably don't talk about it that much now because the house is pretty much gluten-free. Yeah. And when we go out, Megan and me always eat gluten-free. So there's never any issues with cross-contamination between the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of starting to try and point out now more and more, that's got gluten in it, We need, it makes our tummy sore. Mm-hmm. We need to, be really careful with that, don't touch that but I think she's probably going to find it a bit harder because she won't remember being ill. It was a natural sort of transition for Megan, and she knew it made her better, whereas Amelie won't have that. So, yeah, I think I'm going to have to do a bit more education with her, definitely, because it's not so apparent to her.
So that was Karen Woodford, and all talking all about her journey so far with her daughters and celiac disease. And I thought it was really cute that her daughter is, she knows that it's hurting her, so she doesn't want it and she doesn't feel ashamed. She doesn't know. And yes, she is a child, but I think if we can all carry that sort of childlike, no, it hurts me, I don't want this, and not being afraid to say it and not being embarrassed or not missing, just saying, no, it's all okay. And I think that's going to help us all. So in at number 6, I have the wonderful Natalie Newman, also who runs the Intolerant Gourmand blog. And episode 23 is the one that she came and talked to me about her own allergic reaction, because she was actually in episode number 1 talking about her son who has 28 severe allergies. But episode 23, she told me about a severe allergic reaction she'd had very recently, actually, and it was a reaction to an antihistamine, I believe, if I remember off the top of my head correctly. And the little clip I'm going to be playing to you is all about taking control and keeping records. If you're having an allergic reaction, the importance of trying to be on top of it, even if it's just taking selfies in the hospital so that what's happening to you. Because if you're completely unexpected, if the reaction is unexpected, you need to kind of take ownership of this reaction too. Yes, it may be difficult, and yes, it may slip your mind, but the more aware you can be, and yes, that's going to be difficult in a when you're feeling a bit woozy, but Natalie just talks to me about how sometimes not letting the control slip, making sure you feel better by having in control, is going to be good. So without further ado, over we go to Natalie. What else would you suggest? Like, what would be your step 2?
So I would also, if you have somebody there able to do it for you, either video how you're reacting or write down your symptoms so that you have a benchmark that you can check back on. I'm in dispute with the hospital as well because they said that I came in with just urticaria. Now, bear in mind, I'd gone tachycardic. I was being nebulized at the time as well. And I'd been blued and toed to the hospital after having a first responder with me for 45 minutes. They said that I'd been admitted due to urticaria, which is completely false. But it causes problems further down the line during my treatment pathway, because if it isn't coded correctly, then they have no way of knowing that that's what happened. And they won't have all the notes with them. They'll just see a code on the system and go, oh, she hasn't got a clue what she's talking about, whatever. But actually, reality is, it wasn't. It was an anaphylaxis response. And that's a completely different code, which opens up a completely different field in terms of the patient pathway. So it's crucial that you absolutely get that right. And I'm in the process of getting that amended at the moment as well, because otherwise you're not going to get the level of support that you need. And that then causes issues. And if you have something happen further down the line and it's a similar response again, there isn't anything to backtrack and say, oh, she's already had that. It's 100% that's what it is. It's going to be a new situation. And they'll say, well, it's got to happen 3 times before we guarantee that that's exactly what it is.
Oh, lovely. I mean, that's, I mean, that's
I'm not going through that again if I can help it.
yeah, no, it's not a pleasant experience. If you've managed, I mean, I managed 16 years without a reaction, and I don't really want to relive the one that I had. Like, it was not pleasant at all. Yeah,
no, exactly. And it's the same as what I advocate for Callum, and it's the same as what I advocate for everyone that I work with. You want to empower yourself, and you want to know that you're putting all the barriers in place to stop it happening again. The only way to do that is to continue to educate and to update and make sure that everybody's aware of the situation. So question, if your gut instinct is kicking in, question it. Don't even hesitate, because that gut instinct is there for a reason. If you think something's not right, ask. Don't move until you're happy with the answer.
Yeah, and like recording things as well. Even if you don't know whether it's allergic reaction, if you're unsure, even if you're feeling, especially when you're feeling fuzzy while it's happening, having you record it on paper, on film, on photograph, whatever. Take a selfie in the hospital. I know you won't like
doing.
Like, just, you know, recording it, because then you can look back on it later, like you're having to talk to the hospital again and get your files reclassified. Like, if you know that it needs reclassifying, or you suspect that it might need, or, you know, you need to take it to a GP who didn't see you in hospital, who, yeah, like, hospital staff are also incredibly busy and they're very run off their feet. So,
exactly.
You know, human error is there as well. And probably you don't know whether you're getting someone at the beginning of their shift, at the end of their shift.
Exactly.
If they've had a good day or bad day, like, you really don't know. So you kind of, it's all about taking responsibility for your well-being at all times.
That's it, yeah. And being in control, that's the most important thing for me. I think that's the biggest thing I advocate to people that I work with, is if you're in control, you feel better straight away. And you know that if you're in control, there is a less chance of something missing or something slipping up or something happening that you're not aware of. You're going to be more aware of everything that's going on so that you can pinpoint it before it even happens effectively.
So that was Natalie, and I hope you found that useful, because you never know when you're going to end up in hospital. I mean, think about the times where you've needed someone's, you know, cut their hand on a knife or something like that, and you've just had to rush to A&E. That's what allergic reactions are like. You never know when it's going to happen, and it's completely out of the blue. So being prepared before is always a good idea. Next up at number 5 is my mum and dad. On episode 15, which was, as I mentioned, I did a little run of episodes with them. This was the last episode I did with them, actually, with both my parents. And we were reflecting on my allergic reaction. And when I interviewed them, we had never, as a family, talked to my allergic reaction. We just got on with life, because that's what you do with allergies. You can't, you know, sit and wallow, because you have to deal with the next day. So for the first time, and this is like 9 years later, we talk about my allergic reaction. And we reflect on what we could have done differently. What happened? What could we have done? Could we have changed anything? And obviously you can't sit and be upset with what's happened. You can't, you know, there's still a lot of emotion. And my mum realised and my dad realised that, you know, they hadn't quite got over it, but they'd never sat around to think about it. So I think it was quite cathartic for us all, actually. So we talk about, well, I was reflecting on it as well. Like, what could I have done differently? How could I have taken more ownership over my allergy in this instance? So we talk about the importance of getting your child involved and, you know, really being vocal about their allergy. So here's talking to my parents.
It's going to be the sit and wait and eat guests.
Yeah, and I think maybe, I mean, I could have said something, but because I guess we were new, and I mean, this is me thinking back on it and saying, and me thinking about it recently, actually, having heard about other parents' experiences. And I think what I'm realizing is the more the child takes a vocal role in advocating for their allergy safety, as well as the parents, and even taking a more hard line on it than the parents, because I think in some ways I am more unforgiving in speaking with people than maybe you and dad are. And I'm more like, Dad says ask nicely, and I'm more, I actually just go and tell them. I'm not asking them to be, to, I mean, if it's their home, I mean, I'm going to ask people politely, but I'm actually telling them. I'm saying, this is what you need to do.
And this is the first person. I'm third person. Mm. They're hearing from me that you have an allergy. It's never going to have as much impact, actually, you're right, as the person with the problem themselves.
Yeah.
So, saying something. So yes, you're right.
If anything, we can learn from this experience, and maybe for parents of newly diagnosed children, or even parents of teenagers and young children, any child who can speak and who understand their allergy, and they're going somewhere, and a family friend or a family member or anyone like that who's having a problem, and I'm hearing a lot of stories about mothers-in-law or... it's usually the women, actually, I'm realising. All the stories are mothers-in-law and grandmothers who are not believing that these children are allergic. I mean, you probably, because they're the ones dealing with the food, but...
Yes, I was just going to say that primarily they are the ones dealing with the food. But I think generations now, there will be more men dealing with food than women. But it's still going to be a higher proportion of the women, because generally they are the ones who look after the children.
Yeah, so anyone got a problem with some generalising here? I'm sorry, you're going to have to get over that one. But in our experience so far and what we've been hearing, it is women who aren't believing. And that's what I think that people could learn from our experience is, child, allergic child, however old you are, take an active role in it, and parents encourage that to say something, even if they don't want to. You know, you can stand there, you can hold their hand, but make sure they say something, especially if it's someone who doesn't believe you and is acting very blasé. Make sure the child takes charge of it and asks, because they're in charge of their allergy as much as the parent, actually. And at that age, I was 16 and I probably should have, but we didn't know. And it was all still, we were still learning about my allergy. I'm still learning about my allergy and how to manage it in new situations. But I think, for anyone out there who's listening, get your child involved and vocal, because they can be more rude about it in a way if they need to be. And they're going to be forgiven because they're children. And actually, if that child has the backup of their parents, which I had from you and Dad, and I think Dad actually really pushed this when I was a child, make sure if you don't want to eat something, you don't eat it, and we will back you up if you say no to an adult. I think that was Dad, Mum, actually. It sounds like the sort of thing Dad would say. I mean,
yes.
So if you want to listen to that whole episode, that is episode 15. Or the link will be in the show notes, or just go to episode 15 in the iTunes like podcast downloads and you'll find that there. And I hope you found that useful, because for me, definitely after that reaction, I became so much more confident with my allergy. I mean, it took a little bit of time, as in one of my other episodes, I was talking about food aversion, and I was scared of food for quite a while after that. I did get sick quite a lot after my reaction. But you know what? It was for the better. I learned so much, and I started taking so much more ownership of my allergy, making sure that I didn't feel bad about telling people that, no, I wasn't going to eat that, or I know this may feel like an inconvenience, but I really need you to do these things. If you touched... this with a knife and you've cut something with nuts and then you touch my stuff, I can't have that plate, I can't have anything to do with it. And I did not want to end up in hospital again. So from that point of view, I was just, nope, everybody else's feelings come second to my health. And if they'd seen me in hospital, which obviously you never expect, if you see the person in hospital having an allergic reaction, they'd feel far more bad then than if I just said they got a little bit inconvenienced because I said, no, please, double wash something or just keep it away from me. So that's that. Now, number four in our countdown is episode 12. And this is actually another one with my mum. So she's going to be so happy. There's like three of them with my parents. And in episode 12 with my mum, so this is the first part to the episode I previously talked about. Mum talks about how she coped when she found out I was anaphylactic to tree and ground nuts. And the title of this episode, this little series, is Shocked Out of My Socks. And my mum says she was completely shocked out of her socks. So I'm going to play you a clip where she's telling me how she felt, how she dealt with it, and then how she dealt with other people. So over we go.
Used to your allergy. I'd got the processes, the food sorted, everything. And come being invited to parties, I would have to take along your emergency kit, which mm-hmm. is the EpiPen and the
Pyritin, the nebulizer, the inhalers. The
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I would have to say to the parents, could you give me a bit of time? Because I need to talk you through Nina's allergy kit. Oh, why? And I said, because if she has an allergy reaction, you're going to have to deal with it because I may not be able to get there in time. Which freaked them out a fair bit.
I bet.
Some of them were very happy just to hear what had to be done. It was their curiosity, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
But I would talk them through the whole process about using the EpiPen, where to stab you with it, and to ring the ambulance, and nebulize you and sit you up or lie you down or whatever the prescribed position was at that moment in time. And they would be absolutely kind of, oh my God, back flat against the wall and probably fainting if they could. Wow. Wow. My goodness. You have to deal with this. They said, yep. And it shocked them just even seeing the EpiPen out of the box, still in its cylinder. But this 6-7 inch piece of medical equipment that they might have to use, yes, really did strike home the severity of it and their part to play. And yeah. I've never seen so many mums without allergic children checking so many wrappers so wonderfully well.
Oh, that's great. Because it
for the ingredients.
Before this time, had you encountered any other children with allergies like mine?
No.
And how was it for you? Because I know of the mums that I hear about now, they're incredibly worried about letting their children go to school, go to playgroup, play at friends' houses. And they're in a huge panic. Like, how did you deal with that?
Right. Well, I decided that as I spent the whole day in shock when I got the letter saying you were allergic and I realised things had to change quite radically, not so much change, but my attention had to change. And that was the big thing. I was on with food with you. I wasn't on red alert, but yeah. I now moved to red alert as soon as I got that letter. And I thought, right, yeah. I can't live at this state all the time. So I've got to work this out so that I can manage
this
allergy and get to grips with it. Because it's never going to change. It's for life. So I thought, right, got to deal with it from that point. So I decided that as it shocked me, I thought it only fair to share that with other people who were going to feed you. Just a tiny bit.
Okay.
Yeah. But thing was, they had to realize how serious this is.
Yeah.
And if I sensed
if you censored
that
it,
they didn't take it seriously, I wouldn't leave you. But I would talk them through, take the cap off, how to hold it, when to phone the ambulance, look at these instructions here. And I talk them through the instruction leaflet in the pack. Mm-hmm. And some of them were said, yeah, great, okay, I know exactly what to do. That's fine. I'm up for it.
Okay.
And they read everything and they had a great party and you were returned unharmed.
Fab.
And it was wonderful.
And how did
but
you
if
deal...
I suspected.
Yeah. And how did you deal with those parents who were not great about this, that weren't, that either treated it a bit blasé or didn't believe you? What did you do?
Yeah, well, it was kind of like, well, it's more or less what your dad experienced with a friend of his, because your dad suffers with asthma, as you know. And this friend, Justin, said to your dad, well, what did people do in the old days when there weren't inhalers? And Robin, your dad, turned around to Justin and said, they dot, 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 died, Justin.
Not to put a too fine a point on it.
Yes. So I would say to people, okay, well, if you get a bit of peanut butter on your finger, what do? You lick it off. Fine, no problem. My daughter gets a bit of peanut butter on her finger. It's ambulance in the hospital time. Are you really prepared to ring that ambulance and sit in that ambulance with you and go there because I can't get there on time?
Or in time,
are you really prepared to do that? Yeah, in time, yeah. And I said, it's all right, don't worry. I won't bring Nina to the party. Because they didn't want to say, no, I'm not prepared to do it. They didn't have enough bottle to say, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to do it. I can't take that risk. Had they done, I would have said, that's fair enough. I understand completely. And I wouldn't have changed my friendship with them because of that. Because I know this is an issue that some people just can't get to grips with, don't want to get to grips with, or see they have no need to.
So that was my mum telling you all about how she dealt with my diagnosis. And I really hope that some of you new parents out there find this a comfort, because my mum has been what you've been through. Like, she doesn't have any allergies. She loves peanut butter. Now that I don't live at home anymore, there is almond milk. I mean, there was always peanut butter in my house anyway, but now, you know, she's, you know, there are chocolates and things, and I have to be so much more careful when I go to my parents' house now, which is fine. It's their house, and my home, now that I'm an adult, is completely nut-free. So my parents respect that. There are no nuts when they come to my house. And yeah, like, I hope that you take comfort from it, you take strength from it, because sometimes telling other people can be really, you know, stressful. You don't know how to do it, and you can get really emotional about it because obviously it's your child. So if you are feeling this way, listen to the episodes with my parents, because my mum is speaking incredibly frankly about her approach to things. And if you like the way I approach my allergy, I learned it from my parents. So I definitely recommend. There are 4 episodes as well. So that's like almost, I think I spoke to them for almost 4 hours. I did it in like 3 or 4 chunks. So to give us a bit of time and rest between them. So on to number 3. And actually, when I saw the podcast downloads, I was like, what? I'm at number 3. And yes, I am at number 3. I did an episode for number 22 all about how to tell people about your allergies. And I think this is one of the things I noticed when I was talking to people, when I was, you know, interacting with people on Facebook groups, because I am a member of a bunch of them, because I like to, you know, see what's going on and also help out if I can. This is one of the things that proves to be the most stressful part of living with allergies. I mean, when you're at home, once you've got yourself, you know, you've got used to checking labels, you've got used to your routine with cooking, like, that's fine. If you as a parent or you as an allergy sufferer can control everything that's going on around you at home, easy peasy, it just becomes incredibly normal. However, living in a bubble is not fun, for one, and also impractical, because school, work, if you go to church, if you go any, you know, parties, all of that, if you want to experience that, all that life has to offer, you have to get out of your bubble. And this isn't a bad thing. However, telling other people and how to deal with people when they don't understand, and yes, there can be some incredibly just, you could insert any expletive here if you wanted, just nincompoop type people who have got no blooming idea at all. I've met some. However, you just have to take it in your stride. And once you've met one or two that are really nincompoop like, you will get used to dealing with them, and then you'll figure out how to deal with them. But not everyone's going to be like that. Actually, some people are amazing. And you think about your, if you, it's your kid who has allergies, their friends actually are going to be the best. They are going to be so understanding, and they're not going to question that your child has an allergy. They will just know, okay, their friend is allergic to something. If they understand the severity of it as well, which you should tell them, you, their friend can die, they will look after their friend. And I still have my friends from school will still, like, once one of my friends left cookies in my house after my birthday party. I think it was my 21st birthday party. They left a bag with cookies, and they were calling me furiously for a good few hours during the party after they'd left to say, don't eat the cookies. They're not a present for you because they've got nuts in. So they know about my allergy, and they're going to take care of me. And they still do. And they did when I was younger too. Your kids' friends are going to be exactly the same. Also, if your friend's going to look after your allergy, they're friends to keep. If they're not, get rid of them. Okay, and that's me babbling on a little bit. But over to my little clip from episode number 22. And it was a 5-step method on how to tell people about your allergy. And in this one, I'm talking about step 5, the most important one, I think. And that's all about knowing you can say no. So here we go. We're looking at how to tell people about our allergies and how not to feel embarrassed. So first up, we looked at being bold, and then being calm, factual and honest. And then we've got to show people how easy it is to have allergies, like show people it's easy. And then we're looking at being approachable, letting people ask 1,001 questions, 1,001,000 questions. And one of my final steps is you can always say no. Like, it's the one of the most important things, I think, because you don't always feel you can say no. I mean, in life, you always want to make people feel comfortable, which means you maybe do things that you don't necessarily want. Like, that's not, I mean, it's not good in general life, but when it comes to allergies, there is no gray area. There can't be, because it might be your child's life, it might be your own life. So you just cannot, like, underestimate the need to be able to know that you can say no. And when I was a kid, one of my strongest memories of my parents telling me how to manage my allergies, learning how to manage, was, and actually they didn't remember when I told them about it, was always, they told me that I should always know that I can say no. If I don't trust an adult, and I was quite shy as a kid, like I didn't want to go against any adults, and I didn't want to, yeah, upset anyone. And my dad, or both my parents said, look, you can say no. If you don't trust the food, you don't eat it. Like, that is it. You don't eat it. And even if it's an adult telling you, go on, it's fine, it's safe, if you don't trust it, you don't eat it. And they said, and this is a thing that stuck with me, if you feel that you're, if you feel like you're going to get in trouble, don't worry, because we're going to be there. You won't get in trouble, and we're going to deal with it. And for me, that was a big thing, because as a little child, and this was a big turning point actually for me in Eat Allergy Safe, if I am a child, a little child, and I was quite shy, knowing that my parents would back me up, even with a big scary adult, like, I didn't want to tell an adult no. I mean, you're told you don't say no to adults when you're a child. But when it comes to allergies, even an allergy kid is going to know, even when they're young, they're going to know what they can and can't eat, because they've been trained in it longer than the adult who is then looking after them, like school teachers, like carers, like, you know, just helpers in the classroom. Like, if they know that they can say no, they're going to grow up and be so much more confident. And I think for me, that would help me become more and more confident. So that was my quick little rundown of how to tell other people about your allergies. And I hope you found that useful. If you want to listen to the whole episode, that is episode 22. Now we have our last two most downloaded episodes of the last 6 months. How exciting. So we're going over the pond a little bit to talk to Gwen Smith, who is the editor of Allergic Living magazine. And she's in at top downloaded number 2. And I interviewed her on episode 19. Gwen developed severe allergies. She has anaphylaxis in her 30s. Now, that is quite shocking, but adult onset allergies are becoming so much more common nowadays. So over the last few weeks, I've wanted to talk to adults, who have had kind of like life-changing events having an anaphylactic reaction. So in this little clip, Gwen is talking about, I ask her, how has her life changed and how did she adapt? So she tells me a little bit about that. And for anyone with allergies or children with allergies developed from pretty much birth, this is going to be useful for you too. Wow. Okay, so now I want to ask you about some, as an adult onset allergy sufferer, what kind of practical measures did you have to adopt from having no reactions to then suddenly being anaphylactic?
Well, you definitely, well, the hardest for me by far was soy. Mm-hmm. I mean, at first I'm thinking, okay, there goes Asian food. You know, there won't be any more takeout or takeaway, as you folks would say, or going to restaurants. But it was so much beyond that, because soy is used as an emulsifier. It's used as sometimes as a cheap protein to add to foods. So it turns up in innumerable packaged goods. So I am the quickest label reader you ever saw, because I can just, you know, soar through it. I know exactly how to do it. But, you know, that was an adjustment that, you know, you had to adjust how you cook. In some ways, I think I cook healthier because I cook almost invariably from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sure you hear that from other people too. If there's sort of an upside to it, you pay more attention. You also notice things like the chemicals that they're putting in foods, because you do have your nose in the label all the time reading it. So you do see that. I think the hardest part sometimes is socially, because it's very hard. So people want to invite you over for dinner. It's tough to explain to other people. I do tricks like I always send an email to let somebody know if they're going to have me over, what I can and can't eat. I try to keep kind of brief, and I say if there's any issues at all, you know, I'm there for the company. I'm not there for, and I tend to be more inclined to go either to a restaurant where I can order myself or to people over, because it can be challenging to explain to them, particularly about soy. So, you know, I'll have like a note that I can send just so that, you know, the host or hostess has it there to work from. You know, the other thing is, I will say, you know, if you have any labels, just keep them and I can take a look at them. If anything goes wrong, don't worry about it. I'll have salad or something. And, you know, if you're making a dressing and you think it's got soy in it, I can make an oil and vinegar. Just keep mine separate. You know, like just I try to keep it. I try not to close my life up because I have allergies. I still want to see people. I'm gregarious. I like to get out there. Restaurants, I don't know what it's like where you are, Nina, but a lot of them here and across, you know, in some of the big cities I travel to, New York and Washington and Chicago and LA and places like that, I find a lot of restaurants that are good. I'm very good at being the one in a group who will figure out which restaurant to go to. I'll always call ahead and just make sure they're okay with my allergies. Trick that I think is helpful to parents is, if I'm doing a business meeting, I don't want to, you know, this is, I'm thinking of parents dealing with teenagers and people who are going to be going out in the world. If I'm going to a business lunch, I don't maybe want to have the whole topic of conversation become my allergies, which it can when you're sitting there in front of the waiter and you re-raise your allergies, then those people who've sort of forgotten, oh yeah, you have allergies, that's right, then it turns away from maybe what you want the conversation to be. So what I will sometimes do is I probably talk to the maitre d' on the way in, and I will sometimes say, okay, who's going to be my server? I'll take him aside and say, you know, here's my allergies, and I'm going to try to order from your menu, which I've already checked out ahead, but you tell me if there's an issue. So it becomes a smaller conversation and more directed with me rather than across the whole table. It's just a nice way of managing it and still getting it out there, still making sure you ask, but living it a little more successfully than having to turn every single conversation that you have when you go out into, let's discuss Gwen's allergies again. Oh, let's not.
So that was Gwen Smith, Allergic Living magazine editor over from Canada. And they're also available in America. And you can look at their magazine online if you're in the UK or Europe. And I hope you found that useful. I thought it was great. And it's such a great way to approach allergies and adapt your life and not feel upset about it as an adult. Because sometimes when you're an adult, you get very set in your ways and then you start missing things when you can't have them. But I think she's got a great and really positive approach. So for the last episode, the most downloaded episode over the last 6 months was episode 21. And Felicia Sabatinelli is an actor. She's a writer. She's an incredibly talented young woman. And she actually got in touch with me after listening to Gwen's episode. And she wanted to share her story because, like Gwen, she developed allergies in adulthood. She developed them in her 20s, except she has oral allergy syndrome, and she is allergic to the most normal of things that most allergy sufferers are like, great, I can eat fruit and vegetables. Nope. Raw fruit and vegetables, she can't have. She's allergic to many nuts. She's also got environmental allergies, and that's not just it. Her allergies have progressed over her lifetime, and I think she has an amazing approach to her allergies, because in so much of her life, she is having to face the unknown because she doesn't know all of what triggers her allergies. They change from week to week sometimes and from reaction to reaction. And she's had some pretty severe reactions as well. So in this little clip I'm going to play you, she talks to me about how she deals with the unknown.
And the allergist was really progressive and knew a lot. And he said, this is what you have. And he said, you have oral allergy syndrome. And basically, you know, you need to stay away from fresh fruits and vegetables. And he said, oh, and you have nut allergies. And also you're allergic to all these trees and grasses and shrubs and animals. And it really, for me, explained a lot about how I always felt, because I always had sinus infections, or I was always sick, or I didn't feel good. And it was allergies was really interesting. And so from there, it's been, my allergies have progressed over time. So when it started out as oral allergy syndrome, just having an oral reaction, as I'm older, I've noticed I have sensitivities. So cutting potatoes is not an option for me because my hands break out in like a rash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. One afternoon, this was maybe 4 years ago, I was sitting on my bed with two of my really good friends, and we had a fan blowing, and they were eating strawberries. And just from them biting into the strawberries in the fan, my face started to break out in a rash.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it's very unpredictable. I think some people, you know, their allergies are predictable, whereas mine are very unpredictable. Sometimes I could be sitting next to someone who eats an apple, and I'll start to feel kind of itchy, and I won't feel very well. Or, you know, if my partner eats something I'm allergic to and happens to kiss me, my lips might break out. So it's really fascinating. Sometimes I have no reaction and sometimes I do. It's hard. And it's also entertaining. It's scary.
You know what? You're the first person to say it's fascinating. Spoken to so far. I mean, I think that's a great approach because you could get really depressed about it, but it's really good that now it's fascinating for you. I mean, at least You're going to keep learning about it and, you know, figuring out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I hope. I mean, I think that the thing about when you have something, you can either look at it, like you said, in a very depressed manner, or you can look at it and go, you know what, this is part of my journey. I don't necessarily understand it. And you have to always somehow find the humor in it. Is it funny when you end up in the hospital? No, not so much. But it is fascinating because I feel like I'm my own science experiment in some way. It's, I don't know how my allergies are going to be in 10 years from now. It's interesting. And it is scary a little bit, but it's also like, okay, you know, this is the ride I'm on right now. So.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, it's really great to hear from, because I'm a member of like various Facebook groups that people talk about their allergies, and there is a lot of like depressing kind of stories. I mean, some of them are depressing because of the situation, but others are depressing because of people's approaches to it. So it's really nice that you don't have a depressing point of view, and that you are kind of making it your own personal science project.
I tell people that, I mean, this is horrible, but I've told people, I'm like, you know, if I found out the world was going to end like tomorrow, like if some asteroid was going to come down, destroy Earth, I know exactly how I'd want to go out. I would take everything that I'm allergic to, and I would just be like, I'm going to make the most beautiful like fruit salad in the world. And just, and that would be how I would go. This sounds horrible.
Well, if you're gonna go, you might as well have the choice on how. So that was Felicia Sabartinelli, and if you'd like to listen to the whole of her episode, go to episode 21 and you can get that on the show notes. There's a link in the show notes for this episode as well as episode 21. Just go to the list on iTunes or Stitcher Radio and you'll be able to find it there. So that is the top 10 most downloaded episodes for the last 6 months. And how exciting. This is episode 28. I have another great episode for you next week. And I can't wait to get started. I've got lining up loads more great interviews. And if you would like to be on the podcast, if you have a story to tell, it doesn't matter how big or small it is, if you have had an allergy challenge that has proved really difficult for you, but you've overcome it. You've grown in confidence, capabilities. You've learned how to maybe make food fun or make it interesting, or you've really learned something. I want to hear from you, because living with allergies, the big and the small things can get to us. So celebrating those big and small allergy wins. And you know what? Pretty much all of these allergy wins, in fact, all of them are big wins, because sometimes even the smallest thing can bring so much joy. And I want to share that. And I want to share the challenges we have so that those people who are new to allergies, and for those of you who have had them for a while, just remember what it was like when you were like, oh my God, how on earth am I going to deal with this? Well, at this moment, there are parents with their children being diagnosed. There are adults having allergic reactions, and they're going to be like, what the heck do I do? So I want to hear from you, because your story could change someone's life. The number of people I have who come on this podcast and say, I just read this post, or I just listened to this person speak and I can't remember who it was, but they just said something and it just changed my life. So I want you to come and talk to me. You could change someone's life. So that's it for today's episode. And just a quick update. As many of you know, I'm writing a gluten-free, wheat-free, dairy-free, egg-free, nut-free, peanut-free, soya-free chocolate recipe book, and I'm really excited because actually I have almost finished all the recipes. I have 7 more to just finalize, and I have about 3 of them written. I just need to do a couple more trials to make sure they're okay and photograph them, and then I'm going to start, you know, editing the book, which is really exciting. I actually didn't realize how far along I was until the other day, and I went through and I've been printing off the finished recipes, and there's like a little wad of paper of recipes, and it's so exciting. I have about, I don't know, quite a few hundred of photos to go through. I think I'm going to rope my dad in to help me edit them and things and go through them and pick them, maybe make it a bit faster. So this book is going to be coming out really soon. So watch this space for an actual date, but it will be finished by the Allergy and Free From show that's happening in London in early July. I think the show is the 7th and the 9th of July. So if you're coming to the Allergy and Free From show, which I highly recommend you do, you can come say hello to me. And my parents should be there too, so you can ask them lots of questions or have a chat or say hi. I'd really love that. I will have some books on sale then as well. But if you really can't wait until July or when I announce the actual launch date of this book, you can get the first chapter free by signing up to my email list. And on that, I have a chocolate, the essential guide to working with dairy-free chocolate. And I give you like loads of hints and tricks and tips to how to melt, how to work with it, because dairy-free white chocolate can be a little bit tricky because it has no dairy in it. So I tell you all about that. There are a couple recipes in the actual book itself. My favorite chocolate and beetroot sponge cake, which I used to sell when I was making cakes a couple of years ago. That's how I started Eat Allergy Safe, actually. And then following that, you also get a couple bonus recipes in the emails that follow after that download. And you can download it straight away once you sign up with your email address. So that's it for today. I look forward to speaking with you next week. Bye-bye for now.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Modak. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.